This is Beverage Barons.
Hey everybody, this is Joel Whitaker, the editor of Cane's Beverage News Daily, and this afternoon we're delighted to be talking with David Hewlett, who is the founder and chief executive of Chardonnay Box. And I think the first thing we're going to do, David, is ask you about Chardonnay Box, but before we do that, let me simply say that we're going to talk to you a little bit about your views on how millennials are shaping the wine market. So David, welcome, and tell us a little bit about Chardonnay Box.
Thanks so much, Joel. Well, I started Chardonnay Box because I realized there's people out there who know what kind of wine they like to drink, and they want to be they have the wines they normally buy, but they want to be exposed to new ones and expand their knowledge of wine in that sort of category. So Chardonnay Box is a wine club that only ships the sort of buttery, creamy, more traditional California wines to our customers on a monthly basis, and so people can choose two bottles or three bottles each month, and they will most likely get wines they maybe haven't heard of before and get exposed to some really good quality, mostly California wines. So it's a really fun club to run. I've enjoyed starting the company that got started shipping this year.
So it's still in its first year of operation.
It is still in its first year, yep. It took a little time to figure out exactly what our customers wanted to buy, and now that we've sort of honed in on it, we really sort of started pushing marketing, and articles are coming out about us, and of course we advertise on Facebook and do all that kind of stuff now as well too.
And all that usual sort of good stuff. Very good. And are you restricted solely to California, or do you also do other states?
So our wine license is one of the newer wine licenses in the state of California. It's a Type 85 wine license. And what that is wine only, online only. But in terms of buying, the license only allows me to buy from California winemakers or distributors. So, if they're bringing wines in from Oregon through distribution, I can buy from them there. But most of our wines are from California. And then in terms of shipping, we follow the basic direct-to-consumer shipping rules. So, we're able to ship to reciprocal states. But for the most part, our customers come from California. So it hasn't been too much of an issue.
Okay, well, that explains that, and it's another example of how regulation may, in this case, work in your favor, because we are, in this shop, we're very much believers in, developing your market and then expanding slowly, as rather than trying to, start today and in 6 months you now have an operation in Europe, and 8 months later you also have an operation in Asia, that type of thing. So,
definitely.
That may be working to your benefit. We'll check back with you in a year about that. So let's talk about how millennials are shaking, well, maybe they're shaking too, the wine market. One of the things that you've noted in previous chats with other people and articles and so on is that brand loyalty is a thing of the past. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. And I think that, to better clarify that, it's the way that brands are acquiring loyal customers is changing. I think that there is something of a counterculture movement in the millennial generation that's driving new wine drinkers to basically try new brands, to look for wineries that are speaking to them in their language, and trying to, not necessarily drink the same wines that their parents drink. And that's making it hard to create brand loyalty in the sense that it used to be, where, your parents go and they get the same wines at the grocery store most of the time. Now people are going and trying new things. Now people are seeing stuff on social media and wanting to experience new wines that their friends are experiencing. So it's more of a change in the brand conversation than it is in brand loyalty. I think there's a very big opportunity for wineries to create brand loyalty. They just have to change the way that they're doing it.
Okay, I'm going to be interested to hear about that because I was thinking as you were talking that, gee, that seems to me that makes it really tough to be a wine marketer, whether you're a really big guy or whether you're a small, 5,000 case operation, just because if people are constantly moving from one brand to the other, how do you get and keep their attention? But I guess we'll be talking a little bit about that as we go forward. One of the ways, I guess, is social media, right?
Yeah, for sure. And sorry, just to go back to your point, mm-hmm. I think that there is some similarities between the craft beer industry and the wine industry that are going on. You go to the store and you see there's a huge selection of craft beers. And I personally am a big beer fan as well. So, I like to go and try a new beer. And it's great because, initial sales for a new craft brewery might look great, but then I'm going off and trying other beers too. So some of that is happening with wine as well. And my point was that, that is going to happen. And millennials are trying new wines, both, in terms of varietals, but also in terms of geolocation. So you have to grab them when they're there and try to get their loyalty as they kind of go through the process of experiencing new and exciting wines.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things, I guess, the Chardonnay box then does is expose your customers to a variety of different labels so that they may decide, I really like this or I really like that.
Yeah, there's lots of labels at the grocery store that you can try. But there's also these wonderful wines that, just aren't able to distribute to grocery stores and haven't been found yet. And so, I really like to go and go to tasting rooms and try to find those wines for my customers, find exciting ones that really fit that flavor profile that they love.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Now, I believe you said that wineries are staying up to date on social media, David. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
So definitely, yeah. Some wineries are staying up to date. Some of the bigger ones that have budgets to have a social media manager are doing a decent job of staying up to date. So, for example, Frank Family Winery does a great job. Rombauer does a great job. Saddleback Vineyards is a smaller winery that does a pretty good job of just posting a lot on social media, getting sort of their wine out in front of people, how to drink it, what to drink it with, when to share it with people, and that is kind of speaking in a language. I went to Hush Vineyards up in Anderson Valley, and it was interesting. I went into the tasting room, and the lady that was working there said, hey, we did our first Snapchat post. And she was saying they're kind of in this sort of old way of thinking about how they market their wines. And she's really trying to push them to kind of get their wines out in front of people in social media. And I just thought it was very interesting to see, somebody working in the tasting room really trying to help the winemaker make that shift to sort of this digital medium of brand advertising.
Well, it certainly could be to their benefit, I would think, because in some, especially for a smaller winery, they're more or less on a level playing field in terms of social media as versus, a big company. But definitely if they were going out to buy print advertising or if they were trying to put a sales force into the field, they would be in worse shape than a Gallo or, one of those other companies, if you will.
Yeah, and I think it can be a little scary for some of these smaller wineries and older wineries to try out social media, but it's actually very easy to do, and younger staff members may be more than willing to help out to do it and to try it and just to get a conversation going and leverage your current customer base to be your biggest fans and your biggest advocates to get more people tasting your wine. So. I'm excited about the fact that this person was trying to help the winery by going above and beyond their responsibilities to promote it.
Sure. Well, that is very exciting. I've seen that myself in a number of different situations over the years, where staffers at a relatively low level actually take a very deep interest in trying to move a company forward, whatever that company may be. So, but I'm glad to hear it, and glad to hear it's taking place in the wine business, in the smaller wineries, because it definitely is something that would be helpful to them, I think. So, David Hewlett, tell us a little bit about predicting consumer behavior. You know, once upon a I was thinking about this a couple of days ago when I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and here was this new disaster in the retail business, and the story says that they're now virtually over-leveraged, and they got far too much debt, and they can't do this, and they can't do that. And all of that was based upon, you know, some model of somebody that said, well, you can safely go up to this level of debt with, you know, a retailer and all will be well. So, you know, plainly the consumer behavior has changed, and it's hurting Macy's and those other traditional retailers. And it seems to me like that's a really interesting observation you've made in the past about not being able to accurately predict consumer behavior. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's so important, especially in winemaking, where, you know, you're going to have the wines you're going to sell are a couple of years behind, and you're trying to figure out, you know, what wines are you going to be able to move, what are people going to be into, and I think that and that gets a little harder, especially for wineries that aren't in, you know, mainstream grocery stores, mm-hmm. Because, again, it goes back to that sort of craft beer problem, where people are sort of switching between and switching countries and switching states in terms of the wines that they want to drink. And so that does make it hard, right? So I don't have a sure answer for you, other than, you know, kind of going back to try to capture your customer in that moment of trying things out and see what else you can do with them. And whether that's talking to them on social media, whether that is having them there in your tasting room and creating a good brand memory for them. You know, there's all sorts of ways to try to catch that, but you know, with wine, it's tough, and people are getting exposed to all kinds of new varietals. You know, I think that the millennial generation thinks in a very global sense, that we have been a generation of a globalization of information. And most things are at our fingertips, right? So, you know, somebody might taste an Albarino from Spain and think, you know, wow, this is fantastic. You know, I'm going to drink Albarinos now. And I hear that, you know, all these sort of new grape varietals that people are trying and becoming loyal to different grape varietals that aren't typically grown here. Now, that presents both a problem and an opportunity, I think. The problem is, you know, there's wine that needs to be sold, there's grapes that grow well here, but an opportunity, of course, too, for wineries to start testing out different grape varietals, different blends, and really try to speak to the interest of these consumers today, so that they can start to create those wines that these consumers are starting to drink here. And I think, you know, we have some of the best winemakers in the world here in Napa, and for us to be able to get our winemakers working with new grapes and new ideas, really, it's this sort of entrepreneurial revitalization of the way that we think about wine here and different wine areas.
Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. It also seems to me that assuming your business takes off like you would like it to, you may very well have a second business of importing Chardonnay from around the world and letting people test it, or importing other grapes from around the world and letting people test it.
Definitely. I think there's big opportunity there. I mean, I recently went to a Portuguese wine tasting event, and, you know, the wines they were serving were fantastic. And, mm-hmm. and you know, a lot of them had very different characteristics than other wines, you know, obviously from the wines that we drink here, but even from other wines in the sort of, Western European area. And so it was really kind of an eye-opening, fun experience to learn about this country that's making these great wines with these different grapes that I'm not used to having as often.
Sure. And do you think this interest in wines from around the world is restricted to millennials, or do you think it's across all the wine drinking public, or how would you view that? Because I notice you've talked a lot, partially because it's the topic of the interview, I guess, but you've talked a lot about millennials, and I'm just wondering if you see this as a particularly important thing with regard to millennials, for instance.
I think that it is unique to millennials, and I think you know, as the millennial generation grows more and they're consuming a huge portion of wine today, I think it's something like 25% of wine is consumed by millennials, you know, they're going to continue to drive this trend, whereas the other 75% of wine drinkers here in the U.S. are going to slowly, you know, move on, and I think that they are the ones who seem to stick to the wines that they've been drinking. So your more traditional, hey, I drink Cabernet Sauvignon, hey, I drink Merlot, I drink Chardonnay from the traditional style, and I think that, you know, that group will move on, and you'll start to see a new wave of wine drinkers. But I think you could probably make the same argument, and I'm guessing here, but about the way that baby boomers consumed wine here. I mean, so a lot of wine before was consumed from the old world. California started coming up, and baby boomers moved away from old world wines and started to consume California wines, and sort of it was their counterculture to their parents. So it's, I think you're just seeing another trend here, and you're just going to have to see the winemakers here in the U.S. Keep up with that.
Sure. Makes sense to me. Now, you were talking, I think, a little bit about new wine styles that millennials are finding interesting. You want to elaborate on that a little bit more?
Sure. I mean, I know both anecdotally from, you know, going over to friends' houses and seeing what kind of wines people are bringing to events, but also just, you know, from seeing different wines in different tasting rooms. I've seen, you know, more, you know, Riesling in Napa. I've seen an Albarino down in Southern California, and it's just sort of, you see these grape varietals you haven't seen as much popping up. And so I'm seeing some winemakers adjusting and testing with these new grapes. I think, you know, what kind of happened with the Cab Franc grape, you know, traditionally a blending grape, now you see a lot more winemakers trying to leverage, you know, the grapes that they have in their vineyard and create new and interesting things for customers to try and experience. So it's been fun to watch it growing, you know, over the past 15 years, how different wine blends have made it in there, how winemakers are getting more creative. And also, you know, I wanted to talk about the younger winemaker coming in a family winery. So, you know, I am friends with the Wente family, and you know, Eric Wente is the head winemaker and makes fantastic wines, and his son Carl is now in charge of their sub brand Nth Degree. And he's really trying to get very creative and make these very, very fine wines, sort of sticking with the family tradition, but doing something creative with it. Additionally, Navarro Vineyards, you know, they were doing what they do up in Anderson Valley. And I believe it was their daughter of the winemaker decided to bring these mini sheep in to basically eat the weeds, but the sheep aren't tall enough to eat the grapes. And she learned it in at Davis, I believe, mm-hmm. as an old method of taking care of a vineyard. And so you got these young winemakers coming into their family business with ideas of, hey, you know, I want to change things. I want to, like, I want to do something new. I don't want to stick with the old. And so, you know, I think listening to those ideas, especially in your family wineries, and looking to new younger winemakers and their entrepreneurial ways of thinking about making wine, running vineyards, advertising, I think that's, there's just a lot of opportunity for wineries, big wineries and small wineries, to look to a younger generation to find ways to make them unique.
So it sounds to me like you're suggesting that wineries in general should be looking to a new generation for not only sales, but also for marketing and also for production.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much process in wine these days, especially, you know, you talk about a great winemaker is one who can take grapes that are different every year because of the weather and make their wines taste reasonably consistent. And that takes so much process to do that. But you bring these people in that are saying, hey, let's do something different. Let's change the way we think about wine. Let's change the way we think about our brand. Let's create a sub-brand to play with, basically, that they can push through, you know, the winery's tasting room that's already existing, but also just a way to, you know, it's almost like having a research arm of a larger winery, like you would have in a tech company or something, to kind of experiment and see what can we really do here? Can we make some fantastic wine? Can we take all this new knowledge of viticulture and run with it and see what we can do to please our customers? So I think there's a lot of fun stuff coming from a younger generation of winemakers as well. Yeah.
Well, for those of us who write about wine and the business of alcohol beverages and so on, that'll make it another exciting decade or two because, you know, we're always looking for something new to be writing about and talking about and all that sort of good stuff. So, David Hewlett, is there anything that we have forgotten to ask you or that we haven't talked about that we really should have, in your opinion, in this interview?
Well, I just thought I'd mention a couple opportunities for your listeners. You know, I think that for people who are importing and distributing wine, I think there's big opportunity in looking to new countries. So, you know, Croatia, Greece, Hungary, Georgia. So, it, you know, for those people who are importing and trying to sell and push wines here, that you know, people want to try these new wines from new places, I think there's going to be an opportunity there, especially as, you know, this millennial group tries more and more wine. I think some interesting opportunities and problems that are going to exist are around sort of this, what I like to refer to as the on-demand economy. You know, customers, the millennial customers are, you know, customers of Amazon. So, you know, they're expecting free shipping. They're expecting control over what that gets shipped to them. You look at some new, you know, online wine companies like tastingroom.com, which gives you half bottles and you get a taste and fill out a form online to kind of customize what you want. You look at Bright Cellars, for example, is another really interesting online company that does an algorithm to choose what wine is going to be best for you. I think, you know, wineries that are out there now should be trying to think, how can they customize their experience for their customers? They already have this great advantage of having a tasting room and having a personal experience with people. So how can they leverage that to really speak to their customers and understand and learn what they like? I mean, one of the reasons I started Chardonnay Box was because in every shipment of white wines that I got, I would always get one that I didn't like. And then I'm stuck, you know, trying to turn it into a spritzer or, you know, re-gift it to somebody. And that is not really going to fly as much anymore, especially if you have to pay for shipping. And so how do you let customers be in control of their drinking habits and the wines that you provide? So I think there's opportunities there. I think direct-to-consumer shipping is going to be an interesting issue moving forward. You know, that for direct-to-consumer shipping for non-wineries, We can only ship to something like 14 states, but wineries can ship pretty much everywhere. So as that changes, there's going to be, you know, more people may end up purchasing through online companies. So how are, you know, wineries going to get involved and make sure that they can be a part of that and stay relevant in that? So just some things to think about as, you know, to sort of ponder as you take things away from this this interview. But just wanted to offer those up. And also I wanted to say thank you so much for having me on. It's been a bit of pleasure chatting about all this stuff with you. And I hope that your listeners enjoyed it as well.
Well, I hope David Hewlett, they certainly did enjoy it also. Now, tell us two more things. One is how people can get a hold of you if they want to have their wines as part of Chardonnay Box. And then secondly, how consumers, if they happen to be hearing this interview, can place an order with you.
For sure, yes. So all of the information is available on chardonnaybox.com. That's just Chardonnay Box, no spaces, no dashes. If any, you know, winemakers are wanting to get their wines in the mix, they can reach out to me, David H at chardonnaybox.com, and I'd love to taste some of their wines or come out and see their tasting room. And you know, I talk a lot on my blog about different tasting experiences, so it's a fun part of the business for me.
And where is your blog?
And the blog is on the website. It's kind of got a long name, which I did for SEO purposes. So it is chardonnaybox.com, oaky-buttery-chardonnay-blog.
Okay.
But if you go to the Chardonnay Box website, you can navigate to the blog on there as well and check out some of the places that I've been tasting and hear about the experiences and the wines.
Well, that certainly sounds like fun. And David, I want you to know that I will never again look at a picture of a winery without having in mind many sheep running around clearing the ground underneath the vines and knowing that they can be tantalized by the wine, but they can't drink it. So that's going to be a really interesting experience. Thank you so much for your time. Okay, David, thank you. David Hewlett, thank you very much. Good luck with Chardonnay Box, and we wish you much success in that. We thank you very much for the interview. It's been great. Thanks so much. And everybody have a great day. Bye now.